any transition is going to be challenging for them. So they're going to need extra support. They're going to need extra intervention when it comes to making transitions, when it comes to changes. It could be even in the daily schedule. These kids in school, when there's a schedule change, for example, which happens very often in our program, we're part of the Maor program, is part of the Kushner High School program, there are schedule changes all the time. And many kids are very thrown by this, and they need that extra sort of message of don't worry about it, this is what's going to happen, here's the schedule, because they are sensitive to change and dependent on routine. Some of them tend to be very focused inappropriately, meaning that they sort of have blinders on, they are interested only in one particular area of interest, or there's something that's kind of stuck in their heads at a certain point, and it's very hard for them to think about something else or think in, we'll see and think in different ways is really the next one. Rigidity and perfectionism is another, are two features that we also see with our kids, where it is they have a certain idea of the way that things should be or the way that things should go, and they are very stuck there, or they have a very hard time accepting that things are not going according to plan, that the option or the choice that they thought they had and they wanted is not available to them. So they become very rigid. They can be perfectionistic and expect everything to fall into place according to plan, which will be according to their plan. And then it becomes a challenge to kind of get them more flexible, soften them up, see other options and choices. Another feature that we see, which is particularly challenging to parents and educators, really, is when we see oppositional defiant behavior. That would be behaviors where there is a lot of argumentativeness, where there's challenging of rules, there's possibly risk-taking behaviors. This is a particular challenging feature with kids with special needs. Anxiety and self-doubt is, of course, a significant part of the picture very often. And some of that is not just because of their particular, if we say, diagnosis or their particular presentation, but also because they've suffered knocks over the years if they were placed in the wrong setting, if they were placed in a mainstream when they really needed special attention, so that they're going to be filled with more anxiety and more self-doubt, and that anxiety has to be attended to. Then we see moodiness. In terms of mood swings, some days are good days, some days are bad days. And I have to say, as we go through these, since the title of today's talk is Parenting Adolescents Specifically with Special Needs, many of these features honestly apply to most adolescents. These are adolescents. And I think one of the things we need to do when we deal with kids who we call special needs kids is realize that much of their behaviors that we are possibly attributing to their diagnosis or their label is really normal behavior for any adolescent. And it's easier, usually, for a parent, for an educator, to deal with it if it is normalized. And so a lot of these features we see certainly more prominently in many adolescents, if not most adolescents. We also have the passive retreat or aggressive control posture that goes along often with anxiety, where we'll see one of these two responses, passive retreat as a reaction to being scared, anxious, meaning that will be the kid who is afraid to go to school, stays in bed, won't get out of bed, things is just overwhelmed and then stops functioning. And the aggressive control type is the type where, because of anxiety, they become more uptight and more needing to have things their way in a certain way. So it's kind of two polar, in a sense, polar opposites in terms of responses to anxiety, to worry, to fear. And then we have many of our kids have communication challenges. That means that, and they have different learning disabilities that are related to communication, pragmatic language deficits, processing issues, so that they're not necessarily hearing people the way that people mean to be heard. They're not getting the message. And when they give a message, they're not necessarily giving the message in the way that the other person is getting what they really mean. And this is a tremendous challenge with many of our kids. And that's something that I always have to stop myself and remember. When a kid says something that sounds outrageous, for example, I'll think, wait a minute, I don't know if that child really meant to say what came out of his or her mouth. He may have meant, he or she may have meant something else. So that would be, I will talk about in a few minutes, a place to say, repeat, let me tell you what I heard you say. Is that what you meant to say? Or if we say something to them, tell me back what I just said, so we know that that communication piece is more intact. Then we have challenging features that relate to impulsivity and inattention. We have students, we have kids who have difficulty making decisions. Either they are passive about it, they can't come to a conclusion, so they're passively not making decisions, or they're going to be impulsive and make a decision too quickly without thinking it through. That goes along with often procrastination, sometimes risk-taking, and ineffective time management. So this, if you look at this slide carefully, these challenges really very much affect the ability for a child to be a good student. What we call a functional good student is really hampered by some of these challenging features, because the impulsivity, the ineffective time management in terms of inattention, difficulty with follow-through, so you'll have kids who have difficulty keeping up with their assignments, starting assignments but not being able to finish them, losing track of them, distracted in class, forgetful, losing concentration, and in general disorganized. There are challenges with executive functioning skills. So that's going to affect their overall functioning, certainly in the school setting, but it affects their functioning at home too. They're not going to have their room put together in a way that in the morning they're going to be able to find what they need easily unless somebody is teaching them and helping them stay organized, learn how to be organized. So these are some of the challenging features that we want to try to address with some of the strategies that we're going to talk about. So now, I think that the basic skills that are important in parenting really start with communication. And so this particular model, the REACH communication model, is actually Dr. Miriam Adahan's. It's in her books. And REACH is, of course, an acronym. And I think that this communication model is like the fact that it's an acronym, because in the moment you can kind of call on it. You know, what are the letters and what do they stand for? But it really speaks to effective communication with others, not just with kids, not just with our kids, but certainly with our kids. Effective communication that builds relationships. So let's look at the different letters in the acronym, REACH. So first we have the R, reflect. Duplicate in yourself what the other person is feeling. That means stop for a moment. And let's say this is it's a situation where a child is all up in arms and overwhelmed, or might even be chutzpahdik, might even be disrespectful in some way. We tend to want, as parents, first of all, as parents, we tend to get defensive. Some of us tend to feel like we have a problem that has to be fixed. Others of us are very thrown because it's chutzpah, it's disrespect, I have to stop it right away, right? But when we look at this model is maybe a more effective way of reacting to the child's statement, to the child's expression of intense emotion, which is generally what it really is, to facilitate opening this child up to communicate more and see what's really going on underneath. It doesn't mean that we forget about teaching respect. It means that in the moment, we want to focus first on the communication so that we don't shut it down before it even starts. So the first step is reflect, duplicating, feeling what the child is feeling. If the child is, even if is screaming something in a chutzpahdik way, you know, you never take care of me, and you're always on my brother's side, and he's always right, and I'm the one who, you know, got punched in the face, but you're taking my brother's side, something like that, where I got my toy taken from me and my game taken from me, and you're taking my brother's side, and there's chutzpah in whatever the child is saying. So if we stop for a moment and reflect, what does that child feel like, right? The child may be, you know, some of us, again, jump to saying, but you weren't the wronged party. You started. It was really your fault. It's not really your game. He owns it. Whatever it might be, we jump there. We miss this whole process that has where we have an opportunity to get at what's really going on underneath. And we also have an opportunity to build the relationship with the child and help the child come to a place of being able to cope with that intense emotion more effectively. So if we first think for a moment about how the child is feeling, how does my child feel, even though he, she might be wrong to me, you know, they are not really the wrong party, Doesn't matter. It's not about right or wrong. How does my child feel? My child feels like life is unfair, my mother's unfair, my father's not listening to me. That doesn't feel so good. So the first letter is the R, reflecting, thinking about what the child is feeling. The second is the E, encourage, asking the child to tell you what they are feeling without assuming anything. This is a very difficult step, in a sense, because, again, we parents love to jump in and come up with an answer, come up with a solution, or put in what we think, put in what's really going on from our perspective. And encourage tells us to take a step back and basically active listen. Listen to what the child is saying and just reflect back what they're saying as a feeling, right? It sounds like you're really upset that your brother took your game. It sounds like you think that I'm not being fair to you, right? That's encouraging the person, encouraging the child to express what he or she is feeling without making assumptions. Again, it's not an assumption, it sounds like. The sounds like is based on what they're saying in their words, but what's underneath, they're saying it. I'm angry at my brother, I'm angry at you. It sounds like you're really upset at me. It sounds like you're really upset that your game was taken. And that encourages more sharing. Then the A is accept. We accept whatever the person, what the child is feeling, without judgment. It's still not time to jump in with solutions. It's still not time, if it is ever, to say, but you were wrong, but the game really belongs to him, but we said you were going to take turns. Whatever we might feel like we need to say, or we want to say, we hold back. And we engage in acceptance and say, okay, I hear what you're saying. I hear how you're feeling. I'm accepting what you're feeling. I'm not going to that place of solving the problem. I hear it. And then we go to C. C is choices and changes, which is where we encourage the child, we encourage the person to look for solutions or accept the situation, accept what he or she cannot change. And that step, I would say, we have to still be careful that we're not jumping in with our solutions from our perspective, and we're still helping the child come up with choices and come up with solutions on his own, on her own. It's as much as possible, we want to encourage the ideas for alternatives to come from the child. At a certain point, if I feel it would then be helpful to say, well, did you think about maybe trying a different game, since this is a source of conflict, or whatever it is that we might come up with? We very cautiously tread very lightly because we want the child to come up with the solutions. And then the final step is honoring the person, honoring our child for sharing their feelings. I'm so glad that you explained what you're feeling and I got what you're feeling. I'm so glad, and that I think that really, that helped me understand better where you're coming from. And at a different time, if there was a lot of chutzpah, there was a lot of disrespect, at a different time, it could be the time to talk about that. This is the time to communicate. This is the time to open communication. Okay. Then we want to look to some parenting strategies specifically to effectively facilitate emotional growth in our children. So, first one that we can discuss is process versus product. When we look at the process of parenting, when we look at the process of educating, it's important that we focus on the fact that it is a process. It is not a linear process. It is a growth process where it's very often two steps forward, one step back. It's not the end of the world where it's one step forward and two steps back, because even that one step forward is still going to make it easier to get back to where you were before. So that we accept that mistakes, there are going to be mistakes, and mistakes are expected, and not only that, we need the mistakes. We need the mistakes. We need our kids to experience failure so that they can learn how to deal with it, so they can grow from it. So mistakes are expected. They're opportunities for growth. And when we look at the whole picture from a process as opposed to a product perspective, we try to keep perspective in balance so that we stay in the moment and say, okay, this is a process. Just because my child is using foul language every single day does not mean that he's going to use it the rest of his life. Just because he's impulsive now doesn't mean this is the way he's going to be in 5 years. think it's important to then remember that change is incremental and not to become disillusioned, not to become gloomy that this is just the way it's going to be forever. That's something that we deal with within ourselves. And so if we focus on the fact that it's a process, this is where we are now, then we can handle better the fact that our kids will falter. So the child didn't do so well on a test or even failed a test. That's an opportunity. It's an opportunity to sit down and say, what's that about? What can we learn from this? What can we do better? Then along the same lines, really, is the idea of the strategy, really, of meeting the child where he or she is. And this is very, very challenging for parents. This means that we as parents, we as educators, have to find it within ourselves to accept where a child's starting point is. Kids have limitations. Once we're dealing with kids who we are calling, quote unquote, special needs kids, we're dealing with kids who have challenges that may be beyond the norm. So as much as we try to, on the one hand, say that much of this is normal behavior for an adolescent, we also need to say this child is where he or she is in his or her growth process, and I need to accept that I have to set expectations that represent incremental change and not look for too much at once and not be thrown when my child isn't where I really want him to be, where I want her to be. This is very difficult for parents for a number of reasons. One is because we really care about our kids and we really have high hopes for them. And we tend to, and we want to see them, quote unquote, succeed, whatever that means to us. Sometimes some of that is, it demands of us a process of taking ourselves out of it and remembering that we need to see our kids as separate people, as separate individuals, so that that our own sense of accomplishment and success in life doesn't depend on goals we've set for our kids. That's a setup. That really is. That's a setup for a lot of discouragement, disappointment, and really a sense of failure on our part. We remove ourselves and we focus on the child and say, this is about the child. This is about where the child is. I want to drop the judgments about the child. I want to accept that everyone has limitations. I want to meet the child where he or she is and set reasonable incremental goals. If I set goals that are too high, then there's all going to be a constant sense of failure. I need to set goals that are high enough that there's a process of growth, but not too high that it's just a setup for failure. And then we remind ourselves that resistance from our kids is expected. It's not malicious. We want to try to see things from the child's perspective. Rabbi Horowitz was saying, it's tough to be a kid. It's tough to be a kid. It's tough to be growing up. It's tough to be in adolescence. And we want to take their perspective more and feel what they're feeling and feel their challenges and set goals that are realistic for that particular child. Then when it comes to, this is also along the same lines, sort of the next step. When we do set goals for our children, we want to sort of keep our eye on the ball, be mindful of the goal. In other words, when something happens, right, when the kid misbehaves, the kid fails a test, the child did something in school that I'm called on the phone about because it was a bit much, right? I want to first take a step back and think it through. And I'm modeling and teaching that to my child. I'm going to take a step back and think it through. And I'm going to ask myself, where am I putting this misstep in terms of my perspective of the goals, the ultimate goals for this child? How am I going to use this situation to advance the bigger goals? And the example of a child coming home all overwhelmed and up in arms and full of disrespect and cursing, whatever it might be, I have to ask myself, what's my overall goal for this child? I want this child to be a responsible, respectful person. But if I cut off the communication and the exchange immediately, then I'm not going to advance my ultimate goal. I may have to take a step back and not focus on the disrespect in the exchange, but keep my eye on the bigger goals for this child. And of course, I want to look at ways to build the child's self-esteem so that I praise the small acts of kindness and self-discipline and even create situations where the child will have a sense of success. This goes to the idea of not setting our goals too high. I want to set goals that I'm sort of setting up the child for success so that I can use success in order to breed more success. Avoid taking excessive responsibility is the idea, which is so important, that our kids really do have to make mistakes and then have to learn from their mistakes, have to feel the consequences of their mistakes. When parents step in and take excessive responsibility, which is a form of domination, and the parent becomes the problem solver, right, and or sets kind of as the goal, keeping the child happy, solving all the child's problems, meeting all the child's expectations, that stands in the way of helping the child grow. That stands in the way of facilitating growth, in that the child has to learn that if I don't study for a test, I'm going to get a failing grade, and that's going to have whatever consequence it's going to have. If the parent steps in and calls the teacher and says, and don't think this doesn't happen, says, you really have to change the grade because my child didn't sleep enough and he's going through a hard time, and if you don't change the grade, my child is going to just become despondent about school. The answer to that is that's not helping the child at all. The child has to feel the consequences of the mistake, but have an opportunity for correcting it. To help the child say, go to the teacher and talk about what can I do to make up for that grade? What can I do to make it better? Not have the parent step in and fix things. If the parent steps in and fixes things, that is actually a message to the child that takes away from self-esteem, because the ultimate message is, I can't do it myself. My mother has to do it for me. I can't fix things myself. My father has to take care of it. And that does not build the child's self-esteem. So we need to take ourselves away from the role of problem solver as much as possible, set limits and say no, but choose those limits carefully, and make sure that we're there as supportive presences in our child's life, as opposed to dominating forces who are there to run the show and to fix things that break, so to speak. Then we try to engage the child as a partner with common cause, especially with many of our special needs kids. And it's really true for all kids, but particularly with kids with special needs, it's so important not to engage in direct confrontation, but to try to create choices and say, well, here are the choices we have. These are the realistic choices. Your ideal choice might not be available, but here are the realistic choices, instead of going head to head and saying, no, that won't work, forget about it. It doesn't go well to confront in a very argumentative way or to directly confront, but rather we want to engage the child as a partner with a common goal. We want the same thing. We want you to succeed. We want you to have what you want. This option isn't possible. Let's develop other options. And that way, in that vein, we focus on solutions, not on the problem, and we stay in the present. We don't want to globalize and say, you always do this. You're always worried about this. Or this is going to affect your future, or this is what always happens. Instead, we stay in the present. This is the problem. We want the same thing. What choices are available to us? And then we do just that. We try to create choices. Not choices that we, the parents, come up with, because then we're the dominant force, but we try to help our child construct choices, come up with choices that are available. In this particular exercise, I actually like to start with the first step of allowing a child to make a list of all the things that they wish they could have regarding this situation. For example, I had a situation where a student did not want to be in this particular school. And the student was adamant about it. The student was just beside himself. He couldn't think beyond the fact that he didn't want to be in this school. So first I had him write down what I call his dreams. If you could have anything you wanted, what would you have? And he made a list of what his dream choices were. Then we looked at his choices and we tried to modify them to cut them down to what was realistic. It wasn't realistic to change schools. That was his main choice. And then we finally were able to come around to him accepting other choices that he did not think that he could accept. So we try to create choices, but that's a collaborative venture between us and our child. I'm going to skip ahead a little bit because I see we're running out of time. When we ask questions, we want to ask effective questions of kids and avoid the why question. Why did you do that? Why did you fail that test? That's not an effective question. Effective questions are, what's that about? What are your goals? What's your plan? Okay, you don't want to study tonight, so what's your plan to finish for finishing your homework? What's your alternative? And then when it seems like it's a setup for failure, you've done this a lot. You've done this before. You've had this plan before. How's it worked out in the past? To try to help the child come up with the choices and the alternatives that are going to be more effective. Ultimately, we all have to accept and know our own limitations. If we feel that our buttons are being pushed by our children, it's really important to disengage when necessary instead of getting into some kind of heated argument or heated exchange. It's okay to say, we'll have to talk about this later, till we ourselves are able to process what happened or process what's going on or talk to somebody about it. We need to accept our own limitations as well. Now, I don't know that we're going to have too much time for 2 minutes. Okay, so the last couple of slides are temper-reducing tools. These are based on Miriam Adahan's work, where this is what we model and teach. That means we need these tools, at least I do, I can't speak for everybody, for ourselves to be able to cope with the challenges presented by our kids and by other people in our environment and by circumstances. We want to learn to prioritize, to solutionize, to look at the total view and find the good, to see things in normal range, to drop judgments. These are all tools that we want to grow in ourselves and to model and teach to our kids. Avoiding comparison, saying to a child, why aren't you like so-and-so, especially if the child has specific limitations, is not going to help the child grow. It's not going to help the child move along. It's going to make the child feel discouraged and not want to even try. Looking at situations as temporary, phasic, not basic. Having the courage to take a risk. Again, these are all skills, and I like the last one very much, let go but don't give up. Many times we had a hope or a dream for our child, we have to let go of it, but it doesn't mean we have to give up that we'll never attain it. If it's not realistic today, it might be realistic in the future. And so, just to wrap up, I know we didn't have too much time and I apologize, but I think that coming from a place of acceptance of our children, where every child, whether they've been labeled special needs or not, every child has their own individual needs. And it's up to us as parents, it's up to us as educators to meet that child where he or she is and say, we're engaging together in the process of growth. It's about your growth, it's not about me, it's not about my accomplishments through you. It's about setting reasonable goals and celebrating the success of achieving those goals and accepting that, you know, it's hard. Parenting is hard. Parenting kids who have special challenges is even harder. And that needs validation. And we need to attend to our own needs and know our own limitations. And that way we are modeling and teaching a philosophy of growth to our children.